I've interviewed many successful people over the years, and one thing I find fascinating is many of them don't consider themselves business savvy. Take the owners of Tight Knit Brewing. They turn to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards, and do all of it in one place with the Chase mobile app. And that's helped these brew-loving friends turn a passion into a business. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection, and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
Pushkin.
Hey, Last Archive listeners, we have something special for you today. As you know, we love uncovering forgotten stories from history, and we wanted to share another podcast that has that same passion. The show is called Click Here, and it tells stories about the world of cyber and intelligence. Former NPR Investigations correspondent Dina Temple Raston is the host. The episode you're about to hear is about a group of American musicians who smuggled messages in and out of the former Soviet Union in an ingenious way by burying code in their music. Here comes the episode. You can find Click Here wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 1985 in Soviet Russia. Mikhail Gorbachev is the head of the Communist Party, and his great opening to the West, glasnost and perestroika, is still just a glimmer in his eye. 1985 was still the time of that old Soviet Union, the one with defections and the KGB. And into this world stepped the most unlikely of people, four members of a klezmer ensemble from Boston. Klezmer is a kind of Jewish folk music.
It's secular music, and if you've heard Fiddler on the Roof, it's kind of in that style, but more authentic.
Meryl Goldberg is a professor of music at Cal State San Marcos, and that's her on the saxophone. But back in the day, she was part of a pretty famous klezmer ensemble called the Klezmer Conservatory Band. And they had heard about a group in the Soviet Union that went by a very intriguing name, the Phantom Orchestra.
So we first heard of the Phantom Orchestra through the network of people who were working in the 80s, trying to help people escape from the Soviet Union.
They were musicians like them.
We started thinking, we ought to find out about these people.
These musicians were known as refuseniks because they wanted to leave the Soviet Union, but the authorities refused to give them permission.
They were called the Phantom Orchestra because they really were, had to play somewhat in secret, right? So if they had gone out and decided, oh, we're going to play in the park, they would have been picked up and arrested. Most of them had already been either imprisoned or beat up or had a lot of issues already.
They'd gotten fired from their jobs, drummed out of academic and professional associations, and would even get beaten up just for declaring openly that they wanted to immigrate. So when the opportunity of actually going to the Soviet Union presented itself, it all struck a chord with Meryl and her friends in the Klezmer group.
My friend Hank Osnetsky, who is a wonderful musician and teaches at New England Conservatory of Music, where I was a student.
And he approached her with this crazy idea.
The actual ask was to go over to the Soviet Union in secret, essentially, and meet with refuseniks, mostly, you know, focus in on the Phantom Orchestra members, and to find out information about what they were doing, who they were, how they wanted their stories to get out.
They were four simple musicians from Boston, a saxophonist, a singer, a guitarist, an accordion player, and they were going to go toe-to-toe with one of the world's largest secret police forces.
So when he asked me, my first reaction, I think, was, that sounds crazy cool. I'm in.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. Today, at a time when Russian President Vladimir Putin is attempting to redraw the Iron Curtain, we're going to take you back behind it with a story about a very different kind of code than the zeros and ones we usually talk about. This code was made of music, and it was used to smuggle distant messages in and out of the Soviet Union.
I remember thinking, we're musicians. Just creating a code in music would be the easiest way to go about this.
Meryl will play us out. It's no small thing deciding to travel to the Soviet Union in the 1980s to secretly help people escape, even if you were a trained spy, much less a musician from Boston. And you'd think their professions might actually be a liability, but in a weird way, it became a strength. It was the perfect cover story, an innocent-looking cultural exchange. We're just some American musicians trying to bridge the cultural divide.
In the 80s at that time, the more publicity a refusenik or dissident had, the more protection they would have from being imprisoned or beaten up or whatever would happen to them. But if the West knew about them, they had a better shot at getting out.
So coding music to sneak out messages and details about people who are trying to escape wasn't a completely new idea. Meryl and her friends had a model, Josephine Baker. That's Baker singing. She was a Paris celebrity, a singer, a dancer, a bon vivant in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. She was famous for walking her pet cheetah down the Champs-Élysées, and she also happened to be working for the French Resistance. She'd sing at parties, chat up important people, and then pass along what she'd learned to the Allies. Her dispatches were the stuff of legend. She'd learn details about German troop movements or supply lines, and then smuggle the information out to the Allies by writing messages in invisible ink. She wrote on sheet music between the notes. In the 1980s, when Meryl was trying to work out how to bring coded messages into the Soviet Union, she went a step further. Her code was embedded in the music itself. I studied music in school, so I assume she must have created something from the staff. Those five lines and four spaces that are the basis of musical notation are represented by letters. The five lines are E, G, B, D, and F. And the four spaces represent the notes F, A, C, E. Except that wouldn't get you the whole alphabet.
You know, with the regular notes, you only have A through G. So then you have the problem of 26 letters with, you know, only eight notes. Although what I did without giving it away was I created a situation using chromatics.
Chromatics, the 12 half steps when you play the black and white keys on a piano.
And using different notes, figured out all 26. I had three leftover ones like XYZ, but you don't use XYZ all that much. So if someone knew music, they'd look at it and they'd think, huh, that's modern music.
Is there anything that you have that you coded that you might be able to play for us so that we have some idea of what that would sound like?
Yeah, sure. So
Meryl picks up her saxophone.
Here, I'll play a little bit for you.
Believe it or not, there's actually the name of a dissident coded in those notes.
This one was intro to a new person that they wanted us to meet who was a musician. And it was for someone in Moscow.
Marilyn Hankis and the other members of the Klezmer Band spent months preparing for the trip. It was more than just inventing a new way to code messages, though they did that too. The people at the Action for Soviet Jewry gave them a crash course in tradecraft.
We had to have several months of kind of a learning curve and figuring out how we would go in without giving up who we were.
And it didn't take long to put all that to use. In fact, the group needed it as soon as they landed.
So we land in Moscow and we get off the plane. People are talking in little microphones and we think, uh-oh,
because the authorities seem to have been expecting them.
There were at least two of them, and they took us aside.
That's Hank Isnetsky, the teacher who brought up this whole idea to Merrill.
And they told us to get our luggage, but not go anywhere, to bring the luggage into the, I guess, interrogation room.
Definitely we were flagged. There's no question about it.
And sit with an agent.
They start going through everything, and I mean absolutely everything, opening up every single thing we have.
Including Merrill's music.
They're going page by page by page.
She held her breath, kept their gaze, and then, after what seemed like an eternity,
they just hand it right back to me. Oh, it was just really fantastic.
It was 7 hours before they were permitted to leave the airport.
There was one guy who spoke only in Russian and banged his fist on the table the entire time.
When they were finally allowed to go, they had this sense that while the first hurdle was behind them, what lay ahead would be much harder. The Phantom Orchestra was based in Tbilisi, Georgia, which was still a Soviet republic at the time. The mission Merrill and Hankis and their friends had chosen to accept involved trying to meet up with four of its members. Two were from a well-known family of Jewish dissidents, Grigory and Isai Goldstein, and the other two were calling for Georgian independence, Tengiz and Eduard Gudava, both of whom had been sentenced to years of hard labor for their activism. All four were considered enemies of the state, which meant they were definitely being watched and their phones were tapped, so it would be tricky for Merrill and her crew to make contact with them.
I had the directions to their apartment actually encoded in my music, and that's how we remembered how to get there. I'm sure we stuck out, and we didn't know who to trust, who not to trust.
What they did know was that someone was following them.
We noticed, for example, that we would walk up the street and the last car on the block would flash its lights, and then we'd cross the street and then the first car on the next block would flash its lights, and then the same thing would happen on the next block. So it sure seemed like there was something going on. So I remember we went to our hotel room, and interestingly enough, the sink was leaking.
And they said as much out loud, that it was too bad the sink was leaking.
And then when we got back from dinner, the sink was fixed. So that's how closely we were being monitored.
Marilyn Hankis and the two other Klezmer band members, Jeff and Rosalie, found themselves in the middle of a Cold War thriller. They'd go to ballet and museums one day, hoping to throw the authorities off the scent, and then rush off to go and meet dissidents the next, hoping their basic tradecraft wouldn't put their contacts in danger.
We devised in our young brains, which now seems kind of cuckoo, that all of us would get on the subway because we had to take a subway to get to the Goldstein's apartment first to make contact.
The apartment was in Tbilisi, Georgia, and the directions to get there were buried in their musical notation code.
They didn't have a telephone. We couldn't call them. We had to just try to find them.
So to lose whoever was following them, they came up with what they thought was an ingenious plan.
And so we're all going to get on the subway, and then we're all going to get off, and Rosalie and I are going to jump back on.
Then the tail would have to choose between the two groups.
And we thought it worked.
They spent hours walking around buildings and doubling back and climbing darkened stairwells until finally they find themselves at the door of an apartment, and they knock. And
Isai Goldstein opened the door, and the Goldsteins were the first family that we visited.
First thing we say is, we think we've outwitted them, but, you know, we've been interrogated. Tell us if you want us just to turn around and go away.
Grigory Goldstein walks over to the window. There were four cars he pointed to. He said, these are all KGB.
And they laughed at us. Like, of course you're being followed. And please come in, because it's way more important for you to come in. We need you to visit. We need you to tell our story.
When we come back, a secret concert with a phantom orchestra.
Probably the most profound music making I have ever in my entire life made.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase Mobile App is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Company.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
The Phantom Orchestra, of course, couldn't play openly in a concert hall. I thought they'd be playing in some secret venue after hours. But they actually had their concerts in an apartment, the Gudavas apartment.
Typical small apartment. They had an upright piano and a couple music stands, and the Gudavas had at least one guitar, maybe two.
The musicians gathered along with an audience of neighbors.
The chairs went into the other room, I remember, and the idea was, hey, look, we have visitors, they're musicians. It's time for the Phantom Orchestra to come meet and play a concert.
In the room, there was a palpable mix of excitement and a little fear. It wasn't about playing music with the Phantom Orchestra that frightened them. They were all pros at that. It was about what might follow, the consequences of an impromptu concert with a room full of dissidents.
And I think making music in and of itself is not such a big deal. Of course, it was the people who they were making music with that made it into a really big deal.
Were you waiting for the KGB to burst in any moment? What was going through your 26-year-old head?
My 26-year-old head was like living in the moment, I will tell you that.
Meryl and Hankus remember the whole evening as if it were yesterday.
I do remember just being transported, that it was this feeling perhaps of amazement, of relief, of immediate camaraderie.
There was klezmer music and traditional songs. And then this moment when everything seemed to come together with a standard that everyone loved. And then everyone who was there, the members of the orchestra, the visiting musicians, the audience, they all broke into song. What you're hearing now is actually a Phantom Orchestra recording.
It touched us in a way that I hadn't been touched before. And I think because the whole feeling of the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow and the hope in that.
And for an evening, the Soviet minders, the cloak and dagger, the coded messages, they all faded away and the music became all there was.
For the people there who had so much courage and, you know, were constantly battling, you know, whatever was going to happen to them for their activism, playing music was the time when in their brains they could be totally 100% free.
There was a lot of emotion when we played with the Phantom Orchestra, not just from them, but from the audience. And we were really floating when we left that room that night.
As they went back out into the night, they tried to recall all the details that they would later code into their music, what they would eventually tell the world was going on behind the Iron Curtain. A marriage announcement here, a family history there, and the hope was, once the world knew they existed, they'd have the leverage they needed to force officials in the Soviet Union to let them go.
And I think that's part of what the goal of many of the folks was, is, you know, if your story is never told, it's like it hasn't happened. So it was really important to get stories out there. It means you exist and other people know you exist.
As they left the Gudava's house that night, Merrill and her friends were more than just musicians. They were messengers. And now, they just had to get home. Not long after the secret concert, the Boston musicians awoke to an early morning call at the hotel.
We were told to be down in the office at, you know, whatever time it was, pretty early. And they hand us a baggie.
They were the Soviet authorities.
With a tea bag and a hard-boiled egg and a piece of salami, I think, and maybe some crackers. And they keep us very separated from everybody else.
Their minders made clear they knew that Merrill and Hankus and the others had met with the Phantom Orchestra, and they weren't happy about it. They took their passports, put them into cars, and just started driving.
And then they drove us for what seemed to be like hours and hours. And I thought, oh man, now they're really going to do it. They're going to lock us up.
Hours later, they ended up at the airport. And while they didn't end up in a Soviet prison, they were told they were going to be thrown out of the country, deported. But before they could go, there would be one more search. Though this time, the four actually had even more to hide. Not just the names and addresses of contacts, but now they had their stories and messages for the West.
I remember being surrounded by military, and they go through all of our stuff again. And again, they went through every single page of my music.
And eventually
handed it right back.
The stories they smuggled out went very public once they returned to the States. There were speeches and congressional hearings and calls to help the Goldsteins and Gudavas and other refuseniks who wanted to leave the Soviet Union. Remember, the purpose of their trip was to draw world attention to the human rights situation in the Soviet Union. And it worked. The following year, the Goldsteins were allowed to emigrate to Israel. And while the Gudavas were initially jailed after the concert, accused of taking part in treasonous activity and blamed for the hearings that took place on Capitol Hill, the two were finally released in April 1987 on the condition that they leave the Soviet Union. They arrived in Boston that September. The crazy thing is, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Tens of thousands of Jews have left Russia since Putin's invasion of Ukraine earlier this year. And now, Moscow is moving to close a nonprofit organization that helps them emigrate to Israel. is called the Jewish Agency for Israel, and it's operated in Russia since 1989.
That story came to us from Click Here, a podcast about the world of cyber and intelligence. You can listen to more episodes every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Click Here.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. You know, I love music, but I haven't picked up an instrument in years. You know why? I tell myself, I don't have time. Where am I going to find a teacher? Well, there's an answer. Musora. Musora is the place where you can learn essential skills and techniques with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians and thousands of famous songs. You get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 per month, less than a single private lesson. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.